Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Eric Olson. It is time for America's Most Haunted Radio. Fantastic show tonight. We have three guests who are directly and intimately involved with what has become the go-to UFO conference called Contact in the Desert. Holy cats, my friend. Contact in the Desert has become the must-attend event for the worldwide UFO community, with said community converging on the Joshua Tree Retreat Center. That is not easy to say. From August 8th to 11th, 2014, the second annual CITD, will explore UFO technology, ancient aliens, human origins, and the need to know, with dozens, and there really are dozens, of leading scientific and military experts, researchers, and theorists. It's an amazing thing. Contact in the Desert is also exquisitely timed to coincide with the Perseids meteor shower, which will appear to rain into the majestic desert sky from the constellation Perseus, rising in the northeast around 11 p.m., every night of the show, offering a fantastic viewing experience. Man, I wish I could be there. I'm on the other side of the country, sadly. Though I have been to Joshua Tree on a number of occasions, and it is an amazing, mystical place. Award-winning investigative journalist and best-selling author Jim Mars will speak on topics addressed in his latest book, Our Occulted History. Dr. Len Kitai, and please forgive me, we will get corrected on pronunciation. I've been waiting for word by email, but it never came. So we'll just guess for now. Dr. Lynn, she is an internationally acclaimed physician, health educator, and broadcaster who pushed aside her successful medical career to pursue the Phoenix Light book and award-winning documentary project. And we will be talking with Dr. Lynn as well. And then we actually had a fairly last-minute change, and that is okie dokie. And, oh, we have not one, but two visitors with us. Who is with me on the line now, please?
Hi, it's Dr. Lynn Kitai.
Kitai! That's it! You win!
like a key and a tie.
I said a
short That's why they call
eye.
Me Dr. Lynn. It's a lot easier. What's that?
I gave it a short eye. Forgive me.
No, it was good. You were cool.
Okay. And who else? Did I hear a male voice?
Yeah, you got Jim Mars with you.
Excellent.
Howdy, Eric.
Wow. Well, hello there. I just introduced you both, and I guess at some point I was unclear on the order, but it does not matter one whit, my friends. We will also be hearing from someone of a spokesperson for the event itself, as well as a local tour guide, and that will be Barbara Harris. Well, since I have the two of you, stars in your own right, who should talk first? What would you prefer? I'd love nothing more than to have the three of us, and actually the four of us, just chatting away, and eventually actually we'll be joined by my co-host, Teresa Argy, the world-famous haunted housewife, but she's at her son's baseball game, so, you know, that is a priority and will not be denied, and I know, man, because man, I've been coaching baseball for the last few months, and the season just ended, and I'm kind of ready for it. So we can do it any way you guys want. We can go one at a time. We can kind of do a general roundtable. One or the other of you could even call back. It's entirely up to you how you want to handle it. I am thrilled
and
delighted.
Eric, don't forget my motto, which is none of us is as smart as all of us. So we could just all jump in.
Fantastic.
Sounds good.
I like it.
By the way, Jim, it is a pleasure to be visiting with you as well. This is a first for me, and I'm really, really honored to be on the program and to be here with you.
Oh, well, I'm honored to be with you. I have kept up with your work on the Phoenix Lights flyover, and as far as I'm concerned, you're one of the leading experts on that. You were actually there and actually saw it yourself, right?
Oh, yeah, up close and personal.
Yeah.
If you want me to get into it or if you want to start off first, that's fine with me.
Why don't we just go all organic and follow right up on that? Let's talk about the Phoenix Lights for a bit.
Well,
I think it's amazing the way they covered that up. And Dr. Lynn, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but as I recall, the thing came over Phoenix after sailing over a swath diagonally down through the most populous areas of the state, ended up over Phoenix about 8:30 that night. And then about 2 hours later, about 10 or 10:30, somebody had notified the Maryland State Guard and said, hey, come fly over the Barry Goldwater Gunnery Range and drop some flares, which they did. And then the media never even covered the story much when it first happened, but a few months later when USA Today finally did a story on it, and all of a sudden it hit the national airwaves, then, you know, good reporters probably contacts the guard, and they said, yeah, we dropped some flares over there. So the media, mass media, the corporate mass media that keeps so much hidden from us, says, oh, well, the Phoenix Lights, that was just flares dropped by the military. End of story. Wasn't that brilliant? And nobody in the news media seems to stop and think that, wait a minute, that did happen, but it didn't happen when the thing flew over Phoenix.
Well, not only that, Jim, but there is so much mis- and disinformation out there. And actually, you know, unless you read my book and really get into the nitty-gritty, because I stayed anonymous for 7 years after the mass sighting, doing a meticulous investigation, searching for a logical explanation. Actually, 2 years prior to the mass sighting, both my husband, who's also a physician, and myself witnessed and photographed on 35 millimeter, the same exact phenomena up close and personal, and I wondered for 2 years what this advanced technology was. I knew nothing about the topic, nor did I know anyone to even ask about it. And then 2 years later, the phenomena came back 2 months before the mass sighting. There is much more to this story than the general public is aware, unless you actually read my data. And some of the stuff you just said is what is out there in the media, and it actually isn't quite correct, because there were many things that happened on March 13th. Not just one thing, not just two things. There were many things for many, many hours. In fact, the sightings began 2 months before the mass sighting. I actually captured the same exact mile-wide phenomena head-on, turning into a V, confirmed by air traffic controllers the next morning as hovering over Class B restricted airspace, about 1,000 feet altitude. They had no idea what it was. In their own words, they described it as six points of light that were totally equidistant from each other, that seemed to be attached to something, but they couldn't quite see what it was attached to, and you would hear that over and over again 2 months later during the mass sighting as well. And elevated, actually it turned against the wind, and I was taking pictures. If anybody wants to get on the PhoenixLights.net website, the Phoenix Lights Network website, you'll see the pictures right there. It was turning against the wind. One of them was a meteorologist, and nobody was talking about it, and elevated as a unit over a mile wide, and then went behind South Mountain. And when I asked them, well, what was it? They said, beats me. I said, well, you're air traffic controllers. You're supposed to know what's in our airspace. They ruled out every conventional explanation possible. We kept in contact. I continued photographing these phenomena up into and including one of the handful of videos. My video was before 10 o'clock, by the way, and so was an arrowhead. The boomerang videos were after 10 o'clock, and they have become controversial for being flares, but that's a whole other story if we have time to get into. But the point is that the phenomena was around for a while, and there were other people not only seeing it here in Phoenix, and we're talking not only throughout the Arizona, but Nevada, California, and New Mexico. And, in fact, there was a big sighting the day before at the Navajo Nation, over the Navajo Nation, of these orbs going around in clockwise and then counterclockwise circles. They're used to this. I mean, it's part of their culture, which I had no idea until after the mass sighting when I started discovering the vast history of these things, which is also very profound and important. But they just took their lawn chairs and they were watching this thing for hours, and then they thought that would be big news. And the next day, actually the first – reported sightings started coming in at 3 p.m. in the afternoon, daylight sightings. And they continued. They were seen in New Mexico at 5:30, in California at 7 o'clock, and then throughout Arizona for hours. I mean, we're talking hours. And in fact, again, it wasn't just one or two events. It was many events and craft as well as orbs. And if you go on the PhoenixLights.network website and go to the GAP page, G-A-P, Geospatial Animation Project, that was a 12-year compilation of thousands of reports from the UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, Washington, to then-Councilwoman and Vice Mayor Frances Barwood, who was the only elected official. I mean, you were right about that, but she was the only elected official that just asked innocently in a May meeting. This was May after March 13th, and she was plastered to the wall. But she continued on her quest, and we can get into that if you like. But also Village Labs, which was a clearinghouse here, and Arizona MUFON, Mutual UFO Network. And what they ended up with 12 years later, the investigators came up with 8 or 9 different craft that people described, and they're illustrated beautifully by Larry Lowe on the website, and you can see how different they are. Now, whether it was one craft that could morph into looking differently, or the perspective from where the person was standing, or a parade, which is what the investigators finally concluded, because there were so many things going on at the same time, orbs information, craft that people were seeing right above their heads. I mean, this was very low gliding, totally silent. What everybody was seeing was totally silent. And, you know, the next thing we know, some of them were seeing these orbs detach from the main object and going out into the environment, and others were actually seeing it take off at blink speed without even displacing the air. And are you still there, guys?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, hey, well this is, it even
it,
gets more
isn't
interesting.
Also true, isn't it also true that some years after the incident, Fife Symington, the governor of the state,
finally fessed up and said,
yeah, I saw it, and it was a spaceship.
Yeah, well, it's very interesting, guys, how the story unfolded in and of itself, because after the mass sighting, and again, we're talking about, you know, about 8:20, 8:30, as you described, we have a report at 3 a.m. the next morning to the National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, Washington, from an alleged crewman from Luke Air Force Base, who said that one of these objects was hovering right over, and we have the recording in the documentary, which I'm going to be showing at the Contact in the Desert conference, actually, and having a workshop with it. And what he said was this one of these mile-wide craft was hovering right over Central Phoenix, and military jets were sent out to intercept it, get gun camera film, which I heard that they did. And as it got closer, the lights dimmed and then totally disappeared. The whole thing just blinked out. And the crewman said that he helped one of the pilots out of his aircraft. He was so shaken up by it. And that was another thing that happened. And we also have a report from a pilot at 11:30. That evening en route from Phoenix to California, who saw this massive object hovering over Las Vegas, called into radar asking if they're seeing anything, and another pilot calls in all frantic, what is this thing above me? And then suddenly there was a very authoritative voice on the speaker, and it kind of freaked out the pilots. And this is 140 people and crew and everything, about 30,000 feet up in the air. They said, we must be mistaken. About a half an hour later, and this is really interesting, about a half an hour later, they're on approach to California, and suddenly at 30,000 feet, they see a big light, right, like a blast of light next to them about a mile away, and realize it was a flare. And seconds later, a military jet with afterburners about a half a mile away, really close, goes whizzing by in the other direction, and they felt that it was trying to warn them not to say anything, and they were kind of freaked. So that happened about 11:30. We also have reports as late as 5:30 the next morning by a Boeing crew that was coming into work at Sky Harbor International Airport, that there was one of these objects hovering right over their tarmac. So we're talking many, many things happening for many, many hours. Whether the military did send off flares or not, we don't know, because I have to tell you, there was no investigation, no explanation for months. I mean, we're talking nothing.
Right.
And suddenly,
right,
as you said, Jim, the June 18th, 1997 front page USA Today article opened it up to international scrutiny. We were deluged by media from all over the world. And once they talked to the witnesses, their reports were so detailed, so heartfelt. I mean, these people saw it at rooftop level right over their heads. They were looking into these giant wells. We have a pilot in the documentary that describes these giant canisters of swimming light right above him. And they, too, were saying, my goodness, something extraordinary happened here. Why isn't there an investigation? Why isn't there an explanation? And then suddenly, the very next day, okay, for the first time, as you mentioned, Governor Fife Symington actually called a press conference to reveal the culprit of the lights over Phoenix. And everybody took him seriously. And that afternoon, on June the 19th, he comes marching out, one of his aides, with a giant alien head costume and made a mockery of the whole thing, which was really disconcerting for the witnesses and kind of put a lid on things. But I started researching and calling every military base, and I have to tell you, they were just as curious as everybody else. And I finally, you're going to love this, I finally get a call about a month later. I mean, they had to come up with something for the people. There's only a handful of videos because, you know, we didn't have cell phones. We had clunky cell phones then, and anybody that took a picture that did have a camera, it didn't turn out because it blocked out the stars. But we did have a handful of videos, and they had to come up with something to debunk those videos. And if you just look at them, they're really, really stunning. Okay, the data speaks for itself. But at any rate, whoever came up with it was brilliant. I get a call from the head of PR at the Air National Guard, and she says, oh, Dr. Lynn, I think we know what those lights were back in March. And I said, you do? Great, because I was looking for any logical explanation. She said, do you believe in all these months, and this was July 24th, that nobody ever looked at the log for visiting Air National Guard, and the Maryland Air National Guard was in town sending off flares in Operation Snowbird, which I later found out meant, in military terms, diversionary tactical maneuvers, and it's been a diversion ever since, I must say. And she said, that must be what some people saw. And I said, well, wait a minute, when was the Air National Guard in town, Maryland Air National Guard, here? She said, March 1st to the 15th. I said, were they in town here in January? She says, oh, no. I said, are you sure? She said, absolutely not. I said, well, I took 35-millimeter photographs of the same exact phenomena, the same exact mile-wide phenomena in the same exact location, confirmed the next morning by air traffic controllers as hovering over Class B restricted airspace at 1,000 feet altitude. And she says, you never told me that. And then I said, and you're trying to tell me that flares that cannot keep a formation, that drift and drop with the wind and haphazardly in seconds, traverse the entire state in a rock-solid equidistant V formation for hours? And she says, I have a call coming in. I'll get back to you. Well, I'm still waiting.
Yep, that's true. Here's my question.
All right, you may take a breath,
Dr. Lynn.
Well, I'm going to get that in because there's a lot more to this story than most people know, and I know you're very informed, Jim, but the information that's been out there, even from people in the UFO field, unfortunately, and that was one of the reasons that prompted me to come forward after 7 years of anonymity in a 750-page journal later, was that there was so much mis- and disinformation out there. I thought it was important for people to know what really happened here.
Jim Marr.
Yeah.
Go
what
ahead.
I'd like to add, though, is I don't know what you saw, the people saw, because I wasn't there, but I do know military flares, and they don't move in unison. They bob all around in the wind currents, and they flash and they sputter. And particularly since Lieutenant Colonel Jones of the Maryland Guard, apparently they put him up to it, and he said, oh, yeah, we were out there, and we had these flares, and we were getting ready to head back home. We didn't want to carry them back. What? And so we jettisoned them.
Right.
We just chunked them all. Well, you know, if that's true, what he said, then you chunk the flares out. They come out one at a time, boom, 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 boom. They don't come out and go in a perfect line and then move in unison, as you saw.
Right, and not only that, Jim, but you know what? 3 years now, after they came out with this flare explanation, it was like, okay, now I knew I had 35-millimeter evidence that this thing happened 2 months before the mass sighting, and when we went back to the pictures, and if you just look on the photo page in the PhoenixLights.net website, 2 years before the mass sighting, when we were seeing these orbs up close and personal, the same exact phenomena is in the background in the same place. Okay, so I mm-hmm. have evidence. It shows that whoever did it more than once, okay, not just on March 13th. Well, if they did it, fine, do it again. Well, it took 3 years. And a lot of pushing from Councilwoman Vice Mayor Frances Barwood, and she took a lot of heat for this because she was asking for a reenactment, and so were a lot of other people. And right before the third anniversary, and I tell you that most of the public has no idea that this happened, and this is really important, we get an announcement that three Air National Guards were coming into town, three, to show everybody the Phoenix Lights. They were going to do a flare deployment. And I believe it was New York, Michigan, and California. And on March 7th, 2000, they started sending off flares. It was a joke. It was nothing like the Phoenix Lights. I mean, they fell apart immediately.
That's why, nobody reported on that, and you never saw that splashed across
exactly,
the media because
exactly.
it didn't work.
Exactly. Huge yeah. smoke trails, and I'm going to be showing the video of that in my talk. And they fell apart immediately, and it really convinced the witnesses that saw the true unknowns that they were definitely not flares. So that's been ruled out, okay? And by the way, the craft have never been addressed. And it's interesting, as you mentioned, Jim, and also important, because the more credible people that come forward, the more we can progress and evolve in this. And after the 10th anniversary, the former Governor Symington finally bravely came forward to say that he actually saw one of the craft. And as a pilot, an experienced pilot, and seeing it himself, he said it was, in his own words, otherworldly.
Yeah, exactly. My question to you, Dr. Lynn, is, I mean, your background is as a physician, which means you're trained, you're educated, but you're not a newsman, you're not a journalist, I am. My question is, if you, as a private citizen, can find out all this information, how come the corporate mass media can't seem to either find out this information or present it in an understandable manner to the audiences?
Well, that's a really good question, Jim, and I'm actually going to be addressing that very thing at the upcoming MUFON 2014 symposium in Philadelphia, the other side of the country, on July the 19th, talking about how Phoenix and Arizona are actually a model for what should happen. There is no ridicule, no snickering. They take this seriously, and it might have to do a little bit with the fact that I used to do health reporting as a physician, not only in Philadelphia in 76. I started out there while I was still in my residency with Jessica Savage, if anybody remembers that name, and then had a syndication. And when we came to Phoenix, they were already showing the syndication here at the CBS station, and then I started doing health tips for NBC here and then USA Cable. And the people that I worked with in the early 80s here that were just getting started and, you know, were underlings and apprentices at the time, when I came forward, finally, after 7 years of anonymity in 2004 with the first edition of the book, and I squeezed the best of what I had found from that 750 pages to 250 pages in the Phoenix Lights, the Skeptics Discovery That We Are Not Alone, those people were now, in 2004, the head of the news department at NBC and the head of the production department at Fox and et cetera, et cetera. And it was like, they used to call me Dr. X, by the way, the person that had all these pictures, because I really did not want to come forward. And when I finally did, it was like, whoa, come on over, because they knew that I would not come forward, not only if I didn't do my homework, okay, but also if I didn't think it was important to share. And they have been so kind and so credible and professional in addressing these phenomena, even when they can be explained. I mean, we have sightings all the time. Sometimes they're flares. I even did a thing right before the 10th anniversary, they sent up like a line of flares, and I could tell in a heartbeat that they were flares, but other people – could mistake them for the Phoenix Lights because people do look up and look for them here in Arizona. And I immediately, you know, got calls from the news station. I said, no, don't get excited. They're flares. But this is a great opportunity to actually educate the public on what flares look like in versus the true unknowns. And we did a whole report at a couple of the stations. It's been amazing. It's been amazing here, and that's what should happen. Unfortunately, it's not there yet other places, but the fact that over 10,000 people saw the Phoenix Lights here and that we've been talking about it, we do an anniversary showing. I host a sold out every year of the documentary. We have an internationally award-winning documentary that we show every year, and that has evolved too. We have astronaut Edgar Mitchell in it now. I would love to have you in it, Jim, one of these days. At any rate, we have a big celebration. So there's a lot of publicity here, and the news stations really come out en masse to celebrate the Phoenix Lights with us. So yep. It's become kind of a wonderful situation here that others should take a look at.
Allow me to interject a moment.
Sure.
I want to remind everyone, this is amazing, it's fascinating, and that was about the fastest 25 minutes in the history of the world. But I do want to remind everyone that what we are talking about is we have not one, not two, but did Barbara join us?
Yes, hi, I made it.
Barbara Harris. We will be speaking to you shortly. I just want to remind all of our listeners who have been listening with bated breath, my friends, that we are talking about the Contact in the Desert UFO Conference, and that's taking place at the Joshua Tree Retreat Center from August 8th till 11th. And we've been talking the amazing, astonishing, frankly, Phoenix Lights with Dr. Lynn Kitai, and Jim Mars, the world-famous investigative reporter who goes all the way back to the Kennedy assassination. He has been revealing. He has been pulling up rocks and poking around underneath them now for a goodly long time. And we will be talking to Jim about his efforts as well. So just want to make sure everyone knows about the Contact in the Desert show. And, of course, Dr. Lynn's book and documentary are called The Phoenix Lights. Let me ask a question before we inevitably move on, just because we're trying to squeeze so much into only an hour, and of course there will be plenty, plenty, plenty left for those attending the show who will get the full multimedia presentation, be able to ask questions, and on and on. What are these things? Were these things? Were and are these things? It sounds to me, Dr. Lynn, like heading into this experience that you were, I don't know, I don't want to put words in your mouth, agnostic on the UFO phenomena, but it sure sounds like you are not now. So if you could just give us a sense of what do you think these things really truly are or were?
Actually, I've never said what they are, only that they are, and it's time we get this topic out in the open and address it, accept it, and study it so we can move forward and find out who's driving these things, as well as forward in our own evolution. And I hope Jim will talk about this too, because one of the avenues that I started going on, and I'm really going to address at the Contact in the Desert conference, which I'm very excited about, is how it affected people, how these unexplained phenomena, whether it's near-death experience, out-of-body experience, or unexplained aerial phenomena that have a mystical light associated with the experience affect people, not only in real time. I call them UPS, by the way, unexplained phenomena, because the experience, when I started to research that, is very similar, but the after effect itself is so profound, how it touches people to the core. I mean, it changed people in real time here. The movie Independence Day was real big 6 months before. It was very popular 6 months before, and we're so inundated with threat, 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 and harm, 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 that immediately children who saw these giant formations of lights coming towards them were initially scared and jumping up and down, Independence Day, Independence Day. But as it got closer, and we heard it over and over and over again, not only children but adults as well had a calmness take over them, felt a connectedness to these phenomena. They after it passed, they wanted to run after it or get in the car with their parents. And long-term, I mean, it is fascinating how positive, the positive transformation, the awakening, the enlightenment that happens to an individual that truly experiences an up experience. And that's what I'm going to focus on in the in my presentation at the Contact in the Desert. And I really look forward to sharing some of this fascinating data.
So you're going to tell us what the heck they are?
What they are. I don't know what they are. I don't. I've never said what they are. I just know that they are, and I have photographic evidence that has been meticulously and extensively analyzed and authenticated at university level and military level, and to date, they cannot be explained or denied. But I can say that this has not only been happening worldwide at a faster pace and also for centuries, that when you really look at the data, these same phenomena have been here since human documentation began. We're going to talk about that too, because that is such an intriguing aspect of this whole thing. This is nothing new, and certainly indigenous cultures worldwide are totally open to these phenomena as being real, to these beings as being with us, and communicate with them. They have protocols. Even here in Arizona, the Native peoples have protocols to invite them in. And interestingly, just a little aside, and I know Jim wants to jump in, the Estrella Mountain Range, which is a little ways behind South Mountain, which is right behind the airport. And again, if you look at the photo page, you can see the topography on the Phoenix Lights Network website. There's they cross at a little, they kind of intersect, and then the basin in between those two mountain ranges is the Gila Bend Indian Reservation. And ironically, I produce for the last 35 years not only community education, but I produce video and workbook curriculums on the reality of vital health issues. And I was invited to present my substance abuse program at the Gila Bend Indian Reservation 6 months before the mass sighting. And when I looked at my pictures after the mass sighting, it seemed that these phenomena kept popping up in that area. So I called them and I said, did anybody happen to see strange lights on March 13th? And they started to giggle. And I said, is that funny? And they said, are you kidding? We've been looking up at them for centuries. We call them sky people, light beings. It's part of their culture. I had no idea. They call the Estrellas because it means star in Spanish. And when the Spaniards first came here, they heard these stories. There's petroglyphs of the same thing that my husband and I saw, a pyramid formation, a triangle formation of these orbs, as well as the boomerang that are etched in the mountains for centuries. And also they believe that there's a portal or gateway in that area. So, you know, and when you look at my data, I'm not saying that there is, but there might very well be. If you just look at the data, it speaks for itself. So there's a lot of fascinating things, much more to the story of the Phoenix Lights that I'll be sharing at the Contact in the Desert conference.
Dr. Lynn, thank God you're a fast talker.
Well, I know I'm trying. I apologize for talking on 78 speed, but I know Jim wants to get in, and I want to give him an opportunity to talk about his own work and Barbara as well.
Fantastic.
Well, you segued right into it pretty nicely, actually, because one of the points I wanted to make was my talk is our occulted history. And let me point out that I use the term occulted. Don't worry. I'm not going to talk about zombies or devil worship or witches or what we normally think of as the occult. I'm using it in the astronomical sense. When the moon eclipses the sun, that's called an occultation. It occults the sun. It hides or masks the sun. And so I'm talking about our hidden history. And Dr. Lynn was absolutely correct. When you really start studying the UFO phenomenon, you find out it didn't start recently. It didn't start in 1997. It didn't start in 1947. It goes all the way back. I mean, think the Bible, Ezekiel and the fiery wheel in the air that picked him up and carried him to a city. You know, you go all the way back to the ancient Sumerians of Sumer, and they left behind the cuneiform tablets, which still exist, and they tell us that they were given civilization by the Anunnaki, which translates as those who came down from the heavens, landed on the earth. In fact, when you go all around the world, as Dr. Lynn mentioned, you find from the Aborigines in Australia to Africa to the Dogon tribe to the Native Americans of America to the Incas to the Aztecs to the ancient Egyptians, the ancient Chinese, the ancient Hindus, and they all say that people came from the sky, gods, if you will, and gave them all kinds of knowledge and technology. So, you know, we have a whole history as a human species that we haven't been told about.
You got it.
Hence the title. Incidentally, I think we have actually been joined, leaving the baseball game, I think we've been joined by the world-famous haunted housewife, Teresa Argy. Are you there, Teresa?
I'm here. I apologize for coming in late. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. I've been listening as much as I can as soon as I walked in the door. So I apologize for joining the interview late, but welcome. It's fascinating talk, and I can't wait to hear more.
Yes. Jim, we need to power through your amazing information. I'm seeing lots of response on Twitter. People really know who you are. So just if you can, if you will, just give us a nice summary of what you're going
to
be
presenting. Well, they're going to have to come out to Joshua Tree Resort Center and listen to my whole presentation, because I only start back at the Big Bang and bring it forward to the Obama administration. So, you know, there's got a little bit of distance to cover there. One thing I would like to point out, though, and I think this is exciting, and when Dr. Lynn Tai says, you know, that they finally getting serious in the media, I've noticed this. In fact, I think that perhaps the Phoenix Light story, now the major media skipped on that. They did not even report it for months, as she mentioned. But when they did, particularly in Arizona, they actually gave it some serious reporting. And then you come forward to 2010, when we had the mass sightings over Stephenville, Texas, here in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the Texas media, and to a certain extent the national media, actually began to cover that as a news story. And they said, yes, something happened here. This thing came over. It was slow. Everybody saw it. You know, and then when the Air Force said, oh, well, we had scrambled some ungodly number, 25 F-16s, which is no. If you think about 9/11, when they scrambled the interceptors, there were two F-16s from several air bases. Two is about the most you're ever going to find. And they said there were 24 or so up flying around, and that's what everybody saw. And, of course, even the media kind of scoffed at that. So I think we've seen a turnaround here, and I think the public in general, and I think even the establishment news media, is now becoming a little bit more serious and is in taking the UFO story to the public.
Yeah, I don't think it's being denied anymore because of social media particularly, don't you think, guys?
Oh, absolutely. See, you know, I'm old enough. When I started in fact, I could prove that I was looking into UFOs as a young guy back in the 50s, and when the burning question was, do they come from Mars or do they come from Venus, you know, and we've gotten far beyond that, but
isn't that an anthropomorphizing if ever there was one? You know, it's got to be male or female, and
yeah,
you know, so that's tied
to
humans.
And then by the 60s and 70s, it kind of got to be a little bit more sophisticated. They were going, well, do they come from Alpha Centauri or Zeta Reticula 4, you know? And now today, it's like, well, do they come from another time? Do they come from another dimension? You know, do they come from another galaxy? And frankly, I think the answer is yes.
I agree, Jim.
All of the above.
All of the above, yes.
All of the
above. Well,
here's
the thing. There's nobody here, I don't believe, correct me if I'm wrong, jump right in, who can tell us precisely and with great confidence who they are and what they want. But I can, with great confidence, tell you what they're not. And that is, I can't bring myself to believe that UFOs and their occupants are here to blow up the world, blow up the cities, blow up the White House, conquer us, as in some of the movies like Independence Day. And how can I say that? Because they've been here for millennia. They've been here forever and ever and ever and ever. And if that was the agenda, they certainly would have done something while all we had to fight them off with was spears and bows and arrows. You know, why wait until we have all this modern technology to try to invade the Earth? So I don't think that we're in imminent danger of alien invasion.
Totally agree with you, Jim. In fact, it's really important to note as well, in 17, now it's over 17 years, there has not been one, not one report, and I can't speak of other things, but not one report of harm, threat, or abduction associated with the Phoenix Lights. And that in itself is telling, don't you think?
I think so. I do. So whatever
you know,
their agenda is, it's not to kill us and eat us.
And they're also appearing worldwide. I mean, the same phenomena, as you mentioned, in Stephenville, and, you know, we had similar sightings in Belgium and Hudson Valley and in UK, and they're all over the world. And if you go on YouTube, it'll blow you away. Just Google Phoenix Lights, forget it. It's all over the world.
But when I was a kid, one of the big theories was that there was nothing up there. It was just hallucinations or mass psychosis. Dr. Lynn, think about that one for a minute. As a reporter, as a young man, I thought, wow, what a story. A heretofore unknown, undiagnosed, contagious mass psychosis, you know?
Right,
what a story.
Right.
But you never hear that anymore, and that's because with the advent of the camcorder and with all the cell phones with cameras in them now,
exactly.
As you say, just go on the Internet and Google up a UFO, and you spend probably the rest of your life looking at UFO pictures, and so obviously you can't take a picture of something that's not there.
And most things can be explained. I'm sure you would agree, Jim. I mean, it's only a small percentage
of
anomalies
and
that cannot be explained.
And even some of the ones that are not explained could be secret experimental test craft.
Right. Exactly. But there is
a small percentage
that cannot, and just because we don't have the technology yet to definitively define what these things are, it doesn't mean they're not real. We may just be looking on the AM dial for an FM frequency. In fact, if you look back to the 17th century, it took us 17 centuries before the advent of the microscope. I always give this as an example. Before we realize as human beings that there are zillions of living organisms all around us, even in our bodies. We don't see them with our human eyes, and we don't see radio waves or gamma rays, but they're real. And so, you know, it's time we do get this out and move forward, and move forward in our own evolution.
Jim,
amen.
Let me interject here, because we certainly want to talk to Barbara, and being that we have three amazing, fascinating guests, we're having to divide up the hour. Can you pick out a favorite, or using whatever criteria you would like? Give us just an example from the book, one of your favorites, say, on our occulted history. What is something that has been hidden from us, and why has it been hidden from us?
Well, one little tidbit that I'm going to talk about is stories that appeared in the Phoenix newspapers, actually, back in 1909, about how that they had discovered Egyptian artifacts buried in caves in the north end of the Grand Canyon. And the story went on and on. It was quite detailed, and it described these cavernways, corridors, hallways, rooms with all of this wild stuff in it, and it attributed all this to the Smithsonian Institution. Well, now we all know the Smithsonian Institution is this world-famous, repository of scientific information, which it is, but what most people don't understand is that back in the late 1800s, it was taken over and is now a fully owned or fully controlled function of the United States federal government. And so all of a sudden, what happened to all this stuff? It went away. And the Smithsonian today still says, oh, there's nothing to it. That there was nothing there. They didn't find anything. And yet, if you go look at maps on the north end of the Grand Canyon, you find all of these formations and these valleys and canyons and stuff that with names like the Tower of Set, the Tower of Ra, the Horus temple, the Osiris temple, the Isis temple. Well, so what's going on here? Is this evidence that there was Egyptian establishment here in North America? If so, where's the evidence? And if it was there, why did they take it? And why are they hiding it away from us? And that's just one. That's just one thing. Then you can talk about Rapa Nui, Easter Island. You can talk about the plains of Nazca. You can talk about the Göbekli Tepe. You can talk, you know, there's places all over the world that just scream out to say that, you know, that one time there was a highly technological civilization on this planet, and we haven't been told about it.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Well, because if we knew for sure where we came from, then we'd be able to figure out who we are and maybe where we're going. But right now, you know, look at the world. We're all fighting with each other over money and religion and all kinds of things, you know, because we don't have a clear understanding of our past, so we certainly can't see a clear path to our future.
Is there an overarching theme? In other words, is this literally a ongoing centuries, millennia-long conspiracy, or are these isolated incidents that are similar?
Well, I think when I made my presentation at the Joshua Tree Resort, the contact in the desert, I think you're going to be able to see that there is a connecting tissue that comes all the way down through the ages. For example, anyone who studies the monetary pyramid of power in this in the world today knows that the Rothschild families are right up there. Their banking dynasty is right near the top of the financial system of the world. And a few years back, they had a child born, and they named him Nimrod because they claim that they are the descendants of the Sumerian god king Nimrod. Okay, so the point is it doesn't matter whether we believe in all this connectedness and all of this, these ancient astronauts, if you will, and the fact that they or at least their philosophies have been handed down all the way to us today. Doesn't matter if we believe that. The point is, these people who are trying to run the world do. They do believe this. And this is why you have such oddities, such as back during the Apollo space missions. This has been verified even by people within NASA. The dates and timing of the Apollo space shots were not done based on any scientific criteria. They were done based on the positions of the constellations, astrology, if you will. And again, that's pretty wild to think that somebody that has the power to set the time and dates of NASA space launches believes in the positions of the stars that are going to affect the outcome of the mission.
Wow. That is odd.
Wow.
I must say. at what point in your long career did you, was there at some point where you kind of had an epiphany where you said, whoa, there's a lot going on here that we're not being told, the world is kind of topsy-turvy, the reality is not what's being presented? Did that happen at some point, or has it been kind of accumulating over all these years?
Oh, it's mostly been an evolutionary trek, you know. But, by the way, let me give you my warning. Once you start down the rabbit hole of truth, you can always stop, okay? You can say, that's it, I don't want to hear anymore. But once you know something, you can't ever turn back. You can't go back. You can't unlearn something. Just
like
Dr.
Lynn,
you know, if you try to convince her now that nothing was over Phoenix, she's going to laugh in your face because she knows better. She, you know, she just knows it. Okay, now to my epiphany, I think it came in the fall of 1972 because I had been keeping up with the Kennedy assassination, and I had never from the day it happened been satisfied with the official explanation, but I really didn't have anything to put in its place. So I thought, well, if the government says it's just one lone assassin, I guess that's what it is. Even though at that time, even on the day of the assassination, watching the witnesses talk about how there'd been one shot, a pause, two shots right on top of each other. Bam, bam. Well, and then they come out with this old bolt-action World War II rifle, and they said this is the one that did it. Well, I had bolt action rifles at that time. I've been hunting here in Texas, and I knew you don't get a bam-bam with a bolt action rifle. You have to cock the bolt and eject the spent cartridge, put another one in, and so you get a bang, bang. That's the best you're going to get. So I was not comfortable with their lone assassin theory, but I really had nothing to put in its place. And then in the fall of 72, when Eugene McCord, one of the Watergate burglars, finally fessed up to the judge and said, well, okay, actually we were working for the committee to reelect the president, which was Richard Nixon. And at that point, I realized that the president of the United States had, could, and would lie to us. Then all bets were off, and I began to expand my mind and my knowledge and begin to get a better understanding of what's truly going on in the world.
Teresa, please jump in.
Oh, I want to give them time to talk. I'm just trying to take it all in. The one thing I would like to ask our guests, any of them, and again, I apologize for missing the first half of the show, but Eric and I are in Northeast Ohio, and we've heard a lot lately about strange sightings over at Lake Erie, and I was wondering if any of our guests can comment on that, if they've heard of anything being in our area as far as UFOs or anything like that. There's talk that there's some sort of base in Lake Erie, which I don't know, it's the shallowest lake, so I don't know how that would be. But for someone who is not involved in the UFO community, I'm just curious as to if there's anything substantial happening in our area or anything we should be looking out for. I'm taking my daughter to an observatory this month for her birthday, and it's one of the few places on this part of the country where you can get a good night view of the sky. So I was wondering if there's anything we could be looking for.
I can't add much to this other than there are ongoing sightings in Lake Erie.
Absolutely. In fact, I'm from Philadelphia. We moved here 30 years ago, and there were sightings over Lake Erie that we heard about 30 years ago. So there's something going on in that area.
I grew up back in that area, and I can attest that we used to go there for vacations, and as a kid, I would always see things happening over that lake. But as for anything recently, I don't know of anything. So haven't heard anything lately. Pardon me?
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Jim. Please.
No, I could be wrong. It just seemed like that there was something about it, and I thought it was Lake Erie, where they thought they had found a UFO submerged underwater. Does that ring a bell with anybody?
Oh, yes.
I've heard that rumor. I was wondering if there was any sort of truth to it. That's what made me think. The lake itself is so shallow. I find that a little odd. But again, I don't know. I'm not really tuned into this. So.
The important thing is that people are looking up and actually looking for things.
We are, and one of the takeaways all the fast talking, it's so fascinating. But I think what everyone has now mentioned at some point or another, at least obliquely, is things really are different now. It is a different time because the citizenry in general are so much more empowered with the technology, with the cell phones, with the Internet, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And as a result, I think individuals have become much more emboldened. Barbara, please tell us a little bit about what you will be talking about. I know you are local to the Joshua Tree National Park area, and you're going to be leading a tour out to Giant Rock. Is that correct?
Yes, and for most people, part of my job here and what I do is I am the researcher and a historian for the area. And what I talk about mainly is even letting people know why the Joshua Tree Retreat Center is so important for a space, why we're having this conference at that retreat center. It's because of the energy and what that particular space holds. It's 400 acres. It has 18 vortexes. It sits on aquifers. And what's really neat and important to me is it's very close to the 33rd parallel, And for those who follow things like that, the 33rd parallel is a very auspicious ley line when it comes to energy, spirituality, and mysticism. And for one of those kind of things, it, you know, that synchronicity of that, for people who don't know, it, the 33rd parallel runs in synchronicities. It has, it's where the bombs of Nagasaki and Hiroshima went off. It also sits on that same ley line as Roswell. It's on the Bermuda Triangle. And when you get into the biblical mystical mysticisms of the number, it's the number for the number of years King David ruled. It's the number that Christ died. He was 33 when he was crucified. And you get into the biology of 33, and it's the complex sequence of the human DNA. So that number and the retreat center being very close to that energy source and being on aquifer and all the vortexes, it's a very powerful center. And one of the things that has happened out here is there's a boulder not far from the retreat center called Giant Rock. And it goes back to an ancient time. And it's our Native Americans, and at the turn of the 19th century, the Native Americans of this time, they used to hold ceremonies at this rock. And this rock is 7 stories tall. It's over 25,000 tons, and it covers a space of about 5,800 square feet. So it's huge. When you stand next to it, it's huge. However, it's not like the Ayers Rock of Australia. It's a giant granite boulder that just sits in the desert. And the Native Americans used to conduct their seances there. And much like what Lynn was saying, what really has an attraction there and for this whole area that we're in is the topography. What plays a part in drawing in the UFOs for this area, because we're very well known for our UFO activity, is a lot of the topography, the aquifers, and the energy of that 33rd parallel. So here you have this giant boulder out in the middle of the desert, and it was used for seances, and something particularly happened in the 1950s where there was a man named George Van Tassel who showed up out there. And then he had this experience with UFOs and ETs from Venus. And these interactions that he had were these beings from Venus contacted him, and they basically told him at one time that, hey, you guys from, you know, Earth, you're coming along okay as a species. However, it seems by the time you finally get it, you understand what's going on, you die. So they gave him some technology, they gave him some information that helped him to build a machine or a time machine called the Integratron. And I don't know, the Integratron nowadays is a world-famous place, and people go there. And but George Van Tassel was, and they used to come out to this desert space and conduct UFO conventions. And as many as 15,000 people back in the 50s and 60s would come out to the desert to visit this giant boulder and to have UFO conventions. So that's a little bit of what I do and what I'm going to do at the convention. I'll give you all that history and background. But basically, you know, I want to tell you about the retreat center is really the draw, and that's what people really want to come and, you know, and participate in and have there at their convenience, because it's a place that, you know, listening to Jim and Lynn talk, I got so excited into their talk, and can you imagine? We have a speaker lineup that's so intense, where you're going to come for a weekend of that, and on top of that, we have these beautiful night skies where the Perseid meteor showers are going to be going on, and that energy and all that excitement is going to be taking place, and people are going to be coming from all over the world. So for me, it's the energy that's going to build, and the possibilities of what happens when those kind of energies come together in one spot that is actually known and has the potential of drawing in ETs and energy. So, Jim, you were here last year, weren't you? You know
That's
what
correct.
The retreat center is like. It's pretty powerful out here, isn't it?
And it's peaceful.
Yeah. And we took tours out to, we had people going out to Giant Rock last year, and on our little tours that we had out there, there were definitely things that happened. There were some incidents where we looked up into the sky, and we would show up, and you'd point up in the sky, and what we thought were satellites, and somebody would point up a laser and use the words power up, and the lights would start pulsating and blow up and start big bright lights, or point to another thing in the sky that we thought were satellites, and they would stop dead in the sky and go backwards. So, you know, these are the things that, you know, I get excited about. And when you have speakers like Jim and Lynn and, you know, Eric Ten Vonnegut and you know, Giorgio Tsoukalos and people like that coming together, I get really excited. So that's what I like to share.
Wouldn't it be cool if some of them would drop down and join us?
Yeah, that's really
come on in.
Yeah,
isn't it
hey,
exciting? So
sure
you know,
would.
You know that's
and
that's,
we may
we
get
come
close
in peace.
To that time. Yeah.
You know.
Well, that's the whole problem. I think that's the whole problem. That's why they're not doing that, is because if you'll think of the stereotype, when the UFO comes down, the little green guy gets out, and what does he say? He says, take me to your leader. Okay, well, wait a minute. Earth doesn't have a leader. We don't have anybody that speaks for Earth. Putin doesn't speak for Earth. Obama doesn't speak for Earth. So I don't think we're going to have any real face-to-face neighborly contact until we got somebody who speaks for Earth.
You know what I'm
actually
I'm
just interject a little something? I'm sorry.
Sure.
Can I interject one little thing? I think that's...
Please.
That's why it's happening worldwide as it is, that we're having these very gentle, non-threatening visitations, waking one person up at a time, and it's bypassing the government and the military and even religions. It's touching one person at a time. And the more this happens and the more the people really become aware and consciousness is raised, you know, ultimately there'll be a critical mass where people will really understand. It's just like J. Allen Hynek, Dr. J. Allen Hynek, who they plucked from, he was head of astronomy at Northwestern University and became the head of Project Blue Book, which was the only public study of UFOs at the time. And right before he passed in 85, he came forward to say that he was told not to panic the public, and he actually formed the Center for UFO Studies in Chicago. And he made a very important, poignant statement. Not only did he really create the close encounters list, but he also said that science happens in threes. The first step is complete disbelief. The second step is, well, it might be so. And the last and final step is, I knew it all the time. And I think we're getting closer and closer to that final step.
Oh,
sort of
I
agree a Hegelian dialectic.
I think studies... Yeah, the polls show that there is a conditioning process going on, and it's working quite well. The national polls back in the 50s showed that the vast majority of people, I mean 95-98% of the public, said they did not believe there was any life outside the Earth. That was in the 50s. Today, these polls are quite the opposite. Today, 85-90% of the people say, yeah, sure, there's somebody out there. You know, and they'll probably make contact with us at some point. When it gets close to 100%, we're going to see this contact that you're talking about.
Yep, and we're going to have contact in the desert.
Yeah, hopefully.
How
nice.
Amazing would that be? How convenient for one and all. On a kind of serious note, I wonder if it just occurred to me when you were talking about no one speaking, for the world. I wonder if the formation and more or less continuation, for better or for worse, of the UN has had an impact. I wonder if that stands for something with whoever is observing.
Well, I know that I've interviewed a naval commander who was one of the briefers at the United Nations a few years ago, telling some of the member states to, they better get ready because they're going to have to explain to their people that it's real and it's really happening. And so, I think they are taking steps to try to bring the UN into alignment with this conditioning and disclosure program.
Yes, I'll vouch for that, too, because we also have gone to the UN and have appealed to them and said the same thing about, you know, it's time that you release this information to the people of the world. You know, the governments have been keeping it to themselves. And the people, especially today with technology and the way information is being disclosed and coming forward, it's going to happen. It's going to come out. And like Jim said, you better be prepared to let your people know that it's going to happen. The information is going to come out and people are going to know. So prepare.
I think the thing that grabs me is that this embargo around the world, and you're right, all these various governments have been holding all this in, but if you'll really do your homework, you'll find that the French Comita report is out, and they said, yeah, they're real. The Vatican talks openly about UFOs. Argentina, Mexico has tons of sightings. They treat them quite seriously. The problem has been us, the United States. Yes. We have applied pressure through governments, through the military, through the CIA, through the NSA, other things, to all these other governments, basically trying to tell them to shut up and be quiet and don't talk about this. And so I guess we need to start house cleaning right here at home.
Yes, definitely. Yeah,
and that's why it's important that we're out there talking about it, and we have wonderful conferences like Contact in the Desert so people can learn and grow if they choose.
The interesting thing for me is I study history, and part of the thing when I mentioned George Van Tassel, and you go back into the 50s, and there were people like, you know, some of these original contactees, I don't know if people know, you got George Adamski, Daniel Fry, and, you know, just, you know, Dana Howard. They were some of the original people who started this, and they would go to these conventions, and they would start talking about, you know, X-Files and government conspiracies and what was out there during that particular time, the 40s and 50s. And I think for me as a historian, that was a really important part of time that people started to awaken and started to open up to the possibilities that there is life outside of this planet Earth. And people started to feel more comfortable to talk about it and gather in big conferences and big, you know, conventions. And here in the middle of the desert, who would think that people, 15,000 people at one time, would gather? And here we are now in the year 2014, thinking and having people gathering in August again for another conference. So I think it's just the sign of the times, and it's going to become more natural as time does go on.
Teresa, thoughts? Any final questions, observations?
I just wish I could join them at the Joshua Tree Retreat Center. It looks beautiful, and the talk is fascinating. There's just so many different aspects and so much history behind everything that's going on, and I'd love to learn more. Maybe we'll make our way out there one of these days, Eric, right? And
I want to dig the whole thing up and move it here.
Absolutely. My daughter is an aspiring astrophysicist, and so she's very fascinated by everything up in the sky. I know that we were just talking about this today, the observatory, and spending some time looking up, as you said earlier, and keep watching the skies, and I'd like to see what happens. I think there's going to be a shift, as you were saying, Jim, in the thinking, and I think things will start developing soon. I'm very optimistic about
how we're going to grow as a world of awareness to things around outside of our universe, and I look forward to that.
I do, too.
Well, if you come out to the desert at any time, look me up out here, and I'll be willing to take you out and show you the giant rock and show you some of the places that are very popular for UFO sightings out here in the Morongo Basin.
Show us.
I was looking up on the
lights and the sides.
Yep.
Absolutely.
And by the way, if you're going to Lake Erie, you know, look for orbs, just like the Phoenix Lights, because that's what's being talked about recently, and orbs that split, orbs that come together. So just keep looking up, and keep a 35-millimeter camera with you if you can, because they actually capture these phenomena better than digital. They can be analyzed better. So, and I couldn't be talking to you now if I didn't have 35-millimeter photographs of these phenomena that cannot be explained or denied. And pretty soon, this whole topic will not be able to be denied. So I look forward to that, too.
Amazing stuff. Thank you so much to you all. Really enjoyed it. That was the fastest hour and 9 minutes in the history of the world since the Big Bang.
Well, I look forward to seeing you, Jim, and Barbara, and thank you so much for letting me share the Phoenix Lights.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
I look forward to seeing everyone. Yeah. Thanks so much. Y'all are great.
All right, I'm gonna summarize all this for you guys and make sure everyone has the contacts. But thank you again so much, Jim Mars, Dr. Lynn Kitai, Barbara Harris. They will all be speaking and appearing and available for more or less. I didn't want to call it private consultation, but you guys are available on a more intimate setting, right? After you give your main topics, aren't you doing smaller gatherings of people as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes. And I'll also be taking
All right, well, I'm
going to
give all the info now. Thank you all so much again. Really enjoyed it. Absolute food for thought. Amazing, amazing stuff. I have to say, in an hour and 10 minutes, at least to a certain extent, my mind has been changed somewhat. It's amazing. It just shows you what can happen. All right, we are talking about contact in the desert. That is in California at the Joshua Tree Retreat Center, and that is August 8th to 11th of this year, and it would appear every year. And you can get all the information, including the list. It is an actually astonishing list of speakers on the website, and that is, as you might expect, contactinthedesert.com. It really, really is an amazing gathering. Jim Mars' latest book is Our Occulted History. He will be speaking on that very topic. You can find him at jimmars.com, and that is his site. That's a great site. Checked it out myself. All kinds of cool info and all of his many and various books and information and multimedia. Dr. Lynn Kitai, and she, let's see, I have a link to her on the contact site, but more importantly for her, the phoenixlights.net site, and that is, of course, the center of all things Phoenix Lights, and that is www.thephoenixlights.net, and that is both a book and award-winning documentary project. And last but certainly not least, we heard from Barbara Harris, who is a local historian and tour guide around the Joshua Tree National Park area. She will be speaking on the legend of Giant Rock, George Van Tassel, and all of the various ramifications and intimations involved therein. Wow. It's going to be an amazing thing. I would really, this is one, I mean, I say I like to go to everything because I would, but this one, given the location, given the topic, given the range of speakers, if you can make it out there, man, you should do so. Absolutely. Teresa, you still with us?
I am. I just want to say thanks
Go ahead.
Just thanks for joining us. It's been a fascinating talk. It makes me want to know more, and that's something to be said, because this, again, this is not something that that I know that much about, but it just sounds more and more fascinating the more you were talking. So good luck at the conference, and maybe we'll see you there sometime.
Thank you.
All right. And thanks to listeners. As always, the way the system works is it goes off. We actually go off the air live after the hour is up, but everything else subsequent to that is recorded, and actually the vast majority of listeners to the show come from the recording, so everyone will be able to hear all of the words of wisdom. Well, I'm Eric Olson, and once again, this has been America's Most Haunted Radio. We are here every single Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern. Have another great show for you next week. Join us, of course, on Twitter at AM Haunted, Facebook, AM Haunted, and on the web, our newish site is America's-Most-Haunted.com. Have a great week, everybody. Farewell.